Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in DC. Today, my returning guest is Dee Knight of the Pardon the Insurrection podcast. I love when he's on. He has so much to say. We're going to cover a lot, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now please enjoy my conversation with Dee Knight. Welcome back to the show, Dee Knight.
It is a pleasure. Thank you for having me yet again.
Always a pleasure. And it seems you always follow Boozy.
I was going to mention that, actually. I was like, why is it every time you have him on, I got to follow up the next week? I'm like, damn, what if I didn't feel like bringing my A game? Like, why you got to have on the most
you always bring your
A
game.
Follow? Thanks.
It's never planned. It just happens.
That's my guy, though.
And as I told you off mic, part of the reason I wanted you to come on the show today is tonight I'm going to be hosting a town hall on Spoutable, the Spoutable Pods, which is like Spaces on Twitter, with Texas Representative Jasmine Crockett. So, woohoo, I'm so excited. But, you know, obviously there's a lot on my mind. It's a heavy day, and you are always like crazy prepared. You always bring up such great topics. I'm usually the one who picks the topics, but you're a podcaster yourself. So, you always have, and your takes on social media are just fantastic. So, that's why I want to.
You okay sometimes.
You make a lot of really good points, and you're one of the people that I like to listen to because, you know, I mean, there's the like newsy kinds of pundits, and then there's people like us where we just kind of talk about things in a more realistic way. And you have this, not only are you funny, but like you have a different and interesting point of view. And I think it's not, I don't want to say different, but in the way that you frame things, and you frame things in a way that's unique and stuff we haven't heard before. So that's why you're one of my favorite follows. And I'm not just kissing your ass because you're on my, I know I kiss a lot of people's ass on my pods. It's because I like them. It's like I genuinely
like
them.
No, it's
okay.
I don't mind pretending like that never happened so I can feel like I'm special. It's like, I'm the only guy you've ever dated. You haven't slept with anyone else. You were a virgin before.
Oh my God. So there's so much going on. And you had given me a list of things that we could talk about. So let's just start. I'm going to go off your list because you're going to make my life easy. So the first thing is how Democrats continue to outperform the polls. They keep, and I'm just going to throw in that ever since Donald Trump was inaugurated, Democrats have been winning consistently. I mean, we go back to that first, I don't remember which month it was, but it was the first special election in Virginia in 2017. And it was phenomenal. Democrats won, took over whatever House, Senate, whatever was happening there. I don't even remember the details. But I do remember it was, you know, a record number of women and people in the LGBTQ community. So, and they're getting into Congress, and we saw that happening right after Trump. So I just want to hear what you have to say in the bigger picture, especially when it comes to the election coming up, how you think this is going to affect, because Democrats are outperforming the polls, which are all bullshit.
Ooh, man, it is tough. I'm not even sure where to start with all of that. Other than apparently the Democratic Party now at this point is a party that we overperform in low turnout elections, and we overperform in high turnout elections. It's fucking amazing. It's some shit, you know, I never would have thought was possible when I was younger. I mean, I was like focused on politics so much as a teenager, but you know, one of the things that was common in the 90s is the lower the turnout, the more likely it would be that Republicans would win. And now it seems not only have those tables turned, Republicans are just at a complete disadvantage in 2024, and probably for a number of reasons, but obviously because the Republican Party is insane and normal people are not excited to turn out to vote for these people.
Yeah.
But I also think to some degree, Like, Biden doesn't get enough credit for the job that he's done steering the ship over the past 4 years. Yeah. Like, I know he hasn't been out there campaigning, and obviously the media has, you know, they seem to have some intentions of possibly trying to make this election appear as close as possible for ratings purposes, but that's probably a conversation for another day. But the fact that since he's been in office, over the course of 5 year elections like 2021 and 2023, as well as the midterms, Democrats beating expectations, and not just beating expectations, beating the hell out of Republicans. Mm-hmm. Like that the polling continues to like not reflect reality. Like, I don't know what the issue is there. I mean, I know the sample sizes, you know, typically come into question, but the sample sizes aren't necessarily any more divergent from what was happening pre-2016. Mm-hmm. So I can only assume that it's some bias in the way the samples are being made, or being weighted, rather. Mm-hmm. But, like, I guess I'm too off in the weeds there. The bigger picture here is that the polls are fucking wrong, generally speaking, and, like, it's not that you shouldn't pay them any attention.
Right.
It's that, like, you shouldn't use them as a metric of whether or not Democrats are going to perform well. Mm-hmm. But maybe you can look at them as, like, a waypoint for, you know, whether or not Democrats need to change their messaging. So if the polls are moving in one direction or the other, like, just take that as a sign that maybe, hey, this thing is working, this other thing isn't, and go from there. But, like, don't get all bent out of shape. Like, it's really funny, too, because in 2016, you know, everyone was out. They were outraged at what they saw to be flawed polling when it came to the results of the 2016 presidential election. But if you really go back and look, I think October of 2016 there, the polls had Hillary Clinton somewhere around like a 2.5-3 point lead. Mm-hmm. And on election day, that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. She won by like 2.5-3 points. We just,
yeah,
we're just all traumatized from the fact that the Electoral College exists. Yeah. And the national polls don't necessarily predict election outcomes as it pertains to the presidency. And I think we've just got this collective trauma from that. Mm-hmm. Even though 2016 was the only year they've gotten it right, and they've been wrong ever since.
Yes. And, you know, people keep saying that 2016 was wrong, and I agree with you, it wasn't wrong. And what was it's because of the Electoral College, and it's because of the way that basically the Russians, I'm not blaming everything on the Russians, but they did manipulate, and they focused on those swing states pushing Jill Stein, and that absolutely had something to do with it. But what I would like to add into the poll situation, at least from what I understand from Simon Rosenberg, is that the way that the pollsters are conducting their polls right now, they're not going with the more expensive, elaborate. They're going with cheaper polls that are usually done maybe like with numbers that have not been updated. So they're, you know, there's all these newly registered voters, but their numbers are not on, you know, the call sheets for polling. And then on top of it, how many times do you answer your phone when you get
a
call?
That is totally fair.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was funny because I said this, I think the last show, but I was talking to Bob and I said to him, you know, I get all these calls that I don't answer. I'm going to start answering them. And the next call that I got was literally a pollster. So, and it was a friendly Democratic pollster, but it was funny to me that, you know, so many of us, and especially Gen Zers, are not necessarily answering their polls. And I'm going to throw in again, I'm going to remind everybody of this again, that it was like last week, there was a YouGov poll that showed 71% for Biden with Gen Zers. That's, you know, there was also an NBC poll that eventually came out was only white men over 50 basically were polled. So, and it had to do with the favorability, you know. So we look at these polls, and I mean, I agree we should take them with a grain of salt. Maybe use them to improve messaging and get. But we can't really take them seriously now. And then the networks or the cable networks run with them as if it's real. And then everybody starts panicking, and then everybody starts yelling because, you know, the media is also focusing on how old Joe Biden is. And then they just say, oh my God, the polls are saying this, which the polls aren't even accurate. And then they run to this thing. The reason is this, and it's all bullshit, and it pisses me off. And I'm actually weirdly feeling extremely optimistic about this. I don't think Donald Trump is going to win. I'm not saying he won't, but I just don't think he will. I mean, do you have a feeling on that?
I mean, my feelings are probably not relevant compared to like what we've seen in actual data. So, like, I don't know. Maybe the self-selecting sample bias is a problem with mm-hmm. the way polls are being conducted. Obviously, like you said, there's like a, you know, an age range of people who are more likely to answer their phone or not, in that particular age range tends to, you know, lean Republican. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But like, the reason I'm likely optimistic about our chances in November are just based on actual votes.
Yeah.
Like every time there's an opportunity to turn out to vote for a Democrat over a Republican in a place the Democrats aren't expected to win, they overperform.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, the data is so clear cut about that it's practically inarguable. And I just can't understand why the news media doesn't tend to focus on that, but that's fine. That's okay. They can handle the news the way they choose. We can actually look at results of the elections mm-hmm. here, especially, I do get frustrated with media coverage in this one sense, for sure. Like, the fact that Trump barely beat Nikki Haley in one Republican primary,
mm-hmm.
while Biden completely smashed his opponents in the same primary.
Yeah.
And, like, the media covers Trump's win is like, you know, he trounced
right.
the opposition. And then Biden, like, wins in a dramatic fashion. It's like, who cares? And that I do find frustrating.
Yeah.
And I do find it is, like, a particularly interesting method of drumming up clicks, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, Biden's boring. Placing your support behind the boring guy who does a pretty decent job, it doesn't get attention. And, you know, the way the media functions at this point is it thrives off of clicks and engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And you just get a lot more engagement, like making the normal guy out to be a spectacle and normalizing the insane person. And that's just going to be an obstacle we have to deal with. But it doesn't seem as though the people who actually turn out to vote are falling victim to this nonsense.
Yeah.
So that does give me mm-hmm. A slight bit of optimism. As you said, like, nothing's written in stone. Of course, like, it's just February.
Mm-hmm.
The election's months and months away, and if you remember anything about 2016 or 2020, a number of things could change over that period of time, and we're probably going to get to some of that in just a moment. But as it seems, all of the things that are likely to change between now and Election Day are bad for Trump.
Yes, they are. You know, I want to take that into some of these things that could happen before now in the election. So one of the topics that you brought to me was the Supreme Court shell game with Trump's appeals. Now, I just want to start this off before we get into and I'm not the best at talking about all the legal stuff. I will leave most of that to you. I'll chime in. But ultimately, I just have this feeling, and I could be wrong about this, is just a gut feeling based on everything that you just said, really, that there's an indication that the public isn't falling for this. So falling for the fact that the media is turning this into a horse race and whatever the Republicans are saying, that I feel if we do not get to see Trump convicted before the 2024 election, obviously, I think that would be a huge, something of justice, mishandling of justice, whatever. It would not be justice. It would be the opposite of justice. But All of that said, I don't necessarily think that if we don't see a conviction, that means he has a much better chance of winning. I think it makes, I think he would have a much higher chance of losing in a much bigger way if he's convicted. But I don't think if he's, if nothing happens legally, except for a few of these, you know, court cases that aren't really that big of a deal in some of the, you know, it's not like the documents case or the 1-6 case. I think that, well, there's also the other in Georgia, and those are big. But I think that ultimately, I don't
you,
think
you
he's
left
going
out to... another one. But it's totally fine. He's got so many court cases.
I know there's so many. That's what I'm saying. There's so I don't even know what I'm leaving out because there's so fucking many, and there's 91 counts. And so I just I think that we still have a shot, a good shot, of winning without him being convicted. Do you agree with that?
Whew. All right. Yes, but probably for a reason that, like, I feel like I'm the only person that ever even mentions. First, we'll start with the Supreme Court. So, obviously, last week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments about whether or not Trump will be removed from the ballot. And if you've been paying attention at all, you know, everyone practically agrees that the Supreme Court is not going to toss him off the ballot. They don't want to get involved in that. Again, at this point, their name is like, their name is Bennett, and they ain't in it. They don't want to do anything proactive as far as holding Trump responsible. And I think people also have come to assume this idea that what they're going to do is they're going to throw Trump a bone in the ballot case, not have him removed, mm-hmm. but they're also not going to uphold his immunity claim. So,
yeah.
Clearly, the indication that you get from that is that the Supreme Court is not out here to call balls and strikes or, like, I don't know, discern whether or not something is or isn't constitutional. The business they're in is the same as the business you and I are in. That is politics. Mm-hmm. Right, because by the letter of the law, especially with the conservative justices on the Supreme Court, like, they subscribe to the theory of textualism. Like, you look at the fucking words on the document, and if it's plain text, it means what it says it is. Well, they didn't give a shit about none of that last week.
Yeah.
So at least that route for winning 2024 seems to be out of the door. But also, you know, there's the possibility that they do engage in some level of shenanigans in entertaining this immunity, mm-hmm. This presidential immunity deal, and delaying his trial in D.C. just by taking this up and issuing a stay, which could potentially push the trial after Election Day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that that's likely going to happen, but it's a possibility. So yes. Let's go from there. Let's say the Supreme Court is like, hey, man, we'll take a look at this, hold off on that trial. All right, we've got Judge Cannon down in Florida. She's obviously doing everything in her power to make sure the documents case is delayed. Mm-hmm. Say something gets derailed with this Georgia case, the RICO case, because, again, if you're listening to this podcast,
yes.
Today there's a hearing going on which could or could not disqualify Fani Willis's office. Mm-hmm. So say something goes terribly awry there, and then all you're left with is the hush money payments case in New York. Mm-hmm. Say something goes wrong there. All right. It's November. Fast forward. Trump hasn't been convicted in any of these criminal trials. What does that election look like? Well, obviously, if those situations occur, Trump is going to claim that it's a massive victory. He's mm-hmm. going to say all of the investigations were a sham. They were a witch hunt. Complete and total exoneration. The same way he did with Robert Mueller's report, mm-hmm. which was the opposite of a complete exoneration. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, damn, that's going to be tough to beat. Of course it is, because what the media will do is they will just mirror Trump's talking points mm-hmm. and beam that shit directly into people's brains and give Trump the boost he might need to have a chance at possibly winning the election. I think the wild card here, though, is that people seem to assume that because Jack Smith has indicted Trump in a couple of jurisdictions, that investigation is over. That is not the case. the investigation has actually been proceeding along all these months, even since issuing an indictment against Trump last year. The question no one seems to be willing to ask is, what the fuck are these people still investigating? And I think the answer is rather obvious, right? Has anyone talked about the individuals who were surrounding Trump, who were involved in the war rooms mm-hmm. in D.C. on January 6th? No. What about the members of Congress, the senators and House representatives that were involved in participating in the fake elector plot, the fraudulent documents? Anyone talked about that here lately?
Nope.
What about the fake electors themselves?
Yeah.
You know, we've got a number of state investigations where fake electors have been indicted, or some are cooperating or have pled guilty. What's Jack Smith doing about that? Seems like not a thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think because the way I understand Jack Smith to operate is this dude always has a plan B
yeah.
in case things go wrong. Huh. You know, like with this appeal that Trump filed over the Supreme Court to have them take up his immunity plea.
Mm-hmm.
the judge issued a ruling saying Jack Smith had a week to respond. It took him a day.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he had the paperwork right. ready to go because he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Right. Well, say these trials with Trump get delayed
mm-hmm.
to a post-election. I think the plan here was to do everything in his power to make sure that all these cases were streamlined, which means indicting as few people as possible so they're are as few complications as possible and few opportunities as possible for them to be delayed. And if that goes haywire, it's indictment time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're getting all the fake electors. I think we're getting a number of the individuals who were also involved in Trump's coup plot, who were in Congress, and just everyone who happened to be involved in planning the attack on January 6th that might be associated with Trump.
Hmm.
You could look at a number of individuals who were involved in this Georgia RICO case. Hmm. I'm sure they're like, if Trump is number one on Jack Smith's list, these guys are number two.
Mm-hmm.
And if these trials get delayed, he doesn't have any reason to hold back. It's open season on everybody.
That's a great point, yeah.
I think that might actually be more damning. That might be more damning than actually have some of these cases take place, because if members of Congress get indicted,
yeah.
all it takes is a handful of House members to decide to resign and cooperate,
mm-hmm.
and Democrats gain control of the House, which would be far more harmful to Trump's electoral chances. Than maybe even a guilty plea, or rather yeah. a guilty verdict.
And I'm right there with you. I kind of want to throw this in there because I don't want anyone to forget the fact that Joe Biden got like 8 million more votes than Donald Trump did in 2020 when there were no criminal indictments. So I don't think that his, you know, and we know his base is dwindling, and we know that there are people out there who don't like Biden, but they really hate Trump. And so, you know, he's quoting Hitler. He's talking about going to war with NATO. I mean, it's insane. And he's only going to get worse, because even if he's not if he doesn't have to show up for any court case, if he's not convicted or whatever, he's still going to be scared because he doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, especially if he thinks Biden is going to win. And now we all know he does live in his own bubble, so he might be fooling himself enough to think that he's going to win. I absolutely would believe that he could fool himself into that, because that's like, it's the only way he could cope, because there's so many, you know, the walls are closing in so many directions that I like, the only freedom he would have is in his imagination. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think he's terrified. And so I think we're going to see, you know, I just want to throw that out there, that in 2020, there were no criminal indictments or investigations or anything. And he still lost by a big number, and his popularity has gone down. So
no, you're absolutely right. He was as strong as he was ever going to be.
Yeah.
In 2020. And that was, you know,
yeah,
after doing a terrible job at exactly. handling the pandemic, he was still as fine. Like, the thing is, so Biden is at this point, I know it's hard to believe this, put him stronger than he was in 2020
because
he's got the incumbency of being president.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you cannot discount that. But also, when Trump was in that position, he managed to even fumble the bag. There's no way that you can look at the situation that he's currently facing and be like, oh, he has a better shot now than he had in 2020. It's just no way. And the other thing Biden's done is, like, I think people have this idea that, like, because there's all this negative information about Biden, that it somehow makes him an easier candidate to beat. And it's really the opposite.
Yeah.
I know it sounds absurd, but if you think about it, like, there's a multi-billion dollar apparatus at work at all times aimed at discrediting Biden mm-hmm. and making him unpopular.
Yeah.
He is currently the most popular. He's currently, at least according to what happens in these elections where people actually turn out to vote, he's the most productive president at winning elections for himself and for Democrats down the ballot.
Yeah.
Like, and that's with the billion-dollar apparatus at work. You know, social media, Fox News, Breitbart, and it's on and on. If, you know, people are saying, like, oh, you know, it's not too late for Biden to drop out and we can replace him with someone. Well, whoever you think might be an apt replacement for Biden, once that billion-dollar apparatus is aimed at them, they will most certainly lose.
Okay, so check this out. I mean, I know that in, I think it was 2012, the Republicans spent $1 billion on the presidency and they lost. Okay, so keep that in mind. Fred Pogue was on my show a while back, and one of the things that he talked about was how Donald Trump is basically bleeding Republicans dry of money because everything is going to his court cost. And so Fred messaged me today and he said, one thing I failed to see, Donald Trump is absolutely going to steal whatever remains from the RNC to bail himself out financially if Lara Trump gets in there. So he says, we're going to see a deranged con man with no restrictions bankrupt a major political party. And it's already happening. We're already seeing it happen. And it's like they spent $1 million in 2012 and they lost. And now they don't have any money. Because I always would want to point out when people are saying, oh my God, they're spending so much money. And it's like, well, that doesn't guarantee a win just because they, it certainly helps them. And it's better when Democrats have a lot of money to spend, because I know Jamie Harrison has talked about, you know, at least before the 2022 election, he talked about the fact that they were having trouble raising money, but money's not everything. And, you know, the kinds of messaging that I think personally, the Democratic Party's messaging has been improving, especially like the Biden HQ, who's ever running that is so brilliant. And, you know, the Gen Zers are not watching Morning Joe. They don't give a shit what he has to say. Most Gen Zers are not watching Andrea Mitchell or any of these people that we're all screaming at. They're not even watching. So, you know, they're getting their news somewhere else, but I think they're getting their news wherever they're getting it. It's accurate because they're favoring the president that is doing for them, you know, all the things, whether it's getting rid of their school debt or making insulin only $35. There's all these things that, you know, we're going to feel this year, too. I think it's going to be, as we lead up to the election, we're going to see the fruits of everything that Biden and the Democratic Congress passed in the first 2 years. So that's all going to be playing out at the same time that Trump is crumpling and just turning into a mound of goo. So I'm always going to say, Bob Seska, don't get happy.
Orange goo.
Orange goo. Thank you. We can't assume that he's going to win and get complicit and sit back. So I'm never going to say that, you know, always, always, always don't get happy. But here's the thing. I think it's really important to be, when we see reasons to be optimistic, because there's a collective energy in, you know, there's momentum building and feeling like we're going to win. And so if we have this momentum building and we have the action behind it, there's better chance we're going to win. As opposed to taking this, oh, Democrats always lose and we're terrible at messaging, and taking on that negative kind of context, I don't think helps anything. I mean, it's coming from a fear. I mean, we all have fear. We don't want Trump to win, and we don't want a horrible Republican to win. But I mean, I can't help but feel enthusiastic about some of the shit I'm seeing, because Republicans are just, they're royally screwing themselves every single day. They have opportunities to say, oh, let's, like, for instance, when Roe v. Wade was killed, they had opportunities to handle it in such a way. Instead, they doubled down and they want to make it like a federal law that abortions are illegal. And they're, what they're doing with the border right now, I know I'm covering everything, but we can get to these things individually. But
yeah, I was going to say, you're absolutely prepared to talk to Jasmine this evening.
Well, I'm going to try to let her talk more. But yeah, I mean, there's like, they keep fucking themselves over. And on this whole border thing, oh my God. So yeah, my bigger picture thing here is, I do see reason to be optimistic, but we have to make sure we have, you know, engaged civic activity and action behind it. So, you know, FYI.
Man, you've tackled an entire civics class at that point. Yeah, I'm optimistic too, but again, like, the optimism comes from a place of also do the work, right? Like, I
absolutely
to the
yeah.
idea at this point that no matter how optimistic or pessimistic you may feel about the potential chances in 2024, if you turn out to vote, Biden will win. That's what it is.
End of story. Yeah.
But yeah, it does also help to feel like you're probably sitting in a good position, so yeah. you're not ripping your hair out for the next,
exactly.
you know, 8 or 9 months.
I'll just be ripping my hair out the night of. I'm saving it for that night.
Right. Well, I want to circle back to point number one.
Okay.
Because I feel like it is, of all the things you said, it's actually the most important. Mm-hmm. It is the money.
Yeah.
And not because, you know, money wins you elections. It is because with no money, it's impossible
yes.
to win. I feel like that's rather obvious. And I was also giggling that you brought that up, because I was just talking about that yesterday in the pod with Boozy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you haven't signed up for Spoutable, make sure you go ahead and create your account so you can participate in those.
Those are fun.
But yeah, so
yeah, I'm gonna be
what
more
we're going
into
to
that.
See for the first time in modern political history, at least as far as America is concerned, is a presidential election cycle where one party has all the money and the other party has no money. I don't think we've ever seen that before. It's
yeah.
a totally new shit. Thank you, Donald Trump, every yeah. day for inventing some shit we've never seen before. It's incredible. He's like the Wimbenyama of politics. It's bananas. And like one issue Republicans are going to have is that normally, like you said, they spent $1 billion a decade ago and still lost. Well, Trump spent $1 billion nearly over the past 3.5 years. It's mm-hmm. insane. No one knows where the money went, because
mm-hmm.
everyone forgets that Trump raised $1 gazillion for the 2020 election, mm-hmm. right? He lost.
Mm-hmm.
What did Trump immediately start doing after he lost the 2020 election? He started raising money.
Yeah.
Like, he raised somewhere close to, I mean, I think it's north of $3.75 billion
wow.
between the end of the 2020 election, like after post 2020 election, and now. Where is that money?
Mm-hmm.
Where did it go?
It's like, all in the lawyers' pockets.
It's up in smoke. Yeah, you can go, you can like hit the Google button and pull up, you know, cash on hand for mm-hmm. Trump and his PAC. And I think between, you know, Trump's personal finance, well, not his political finances and the RNC, they've got like $20 million in cash on hand.
Wow.
Maybe. And Biden and the DNC and Biden Super PAC have somewhere close to at least $110 million
wow.
cash on hand. That's insane.
Yeah.
If you know anything about like the funding
yeah.
of a presidential election cycle, to have no money at this time of year as the primaries are going on is
yeah.
fucking bananas. But not only that, like, all the money that Trump raised from November of 2020 until now, that's money that would be flowing into their pockets
mm-hmm.
that they'll never see.
Mm-hmm.
Trump spent all this time tapping the small donors of the Republican Party dry, and now there's nothing left to give when they really need it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they had it, like you said, like, the dude is facing so many legal issues in so many jurisdictions, both criminal and civil, that I don't know what the actual burn rate is to fund his legal defenses. Again, because like some of those numbers are obscured by the way he's spending his political action committee money, but it's got to be somewhere in the realm of, you know, $10, $12, $15 million a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's not paying that out of his pocket.
Nope.
So if that money is being taken away from whatever campaigning he would be doing later on this year against Biden and being spent on his legal fees, like, what the fuck kind of campaign will this look like? Will they be able to afford a single ad? I don't know. He better be happy that Elon Musk took over Twitter. Exactly. And might give him a little discount on some Twitter ads. But again, like, I don't know who's going to see that shit besides the bots.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely insane, the history we're living through right now. And I, you know, I mean, none of us really know exactly how this is all going to pan out. The thing that really does upset and scare me is the way our media is handling this, because, you know,
it
like
was so bad.
Yeah, it's really bad.
I'm sorry, I'm traumatized still. So bad.
I am traumatized day. Because that we have to rely on media to be the one place we can go. And, you know, for instance, like with MSNBC, I've said this before, but it's not that they're lying to us, but they're only in many cases, not all, people like Lawrence O'Donnell. I know that, you know, he has to follow the directions of whatever he's told he can and can't report on, but I totally trust him. I really like Lawrence O'Donnell. I like usually like all of the nighttime hosts. I enjoy all of them, but the thing is that what we're getting from the media as a whole is only part of the story. When you only interview Trump voters and you're ignoring Biden voters, you're only getting one part of the story. And that's one of the problems of the news media. But I guess the thing that at least gives me hope is that, you know, like I was saying earlier, a lot of young people, they're turned off by this. They're not interested in the horse race. They're not really paying attention to it. And what I do hope comes from this, because I think it's a complete meltdown of the way we get our news, I hope that somebody starts up a new news organization that's kind of based on, you know, the gatekeepers, based on how it used to be. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but I think that young people are watching what we're all going through, and I know they don't like it. I know they feel worried. They're worried about climate. They're worried about abortion. They're worried about guns. I mean, there's so many things they're worried about. And I think at some point somebody's going to say, hey, we have to change, you know, how we're communicating. And it starts with the news media. So, I mean, I just hope, because like that, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg said the pendulum always swings. So right now we're in a really very negative place where our news media is concerned. And I'm hopeful, but I don't know. I have no predictions on how this will go. I just hope it turns out that we, can find a better way to get news out there that people feel they can trust. Like everyone's, a MAGA could watch it and trust it. I mean, I don't know if we can't have MAGA anymore. We just can't. We can't let them fucking rule anything anymore.
I've got my concerns about the media again. It's not... I don't want to say they're all bad, because that's not...
No, they're not.
It's not necessarily... What I have the largest problem with is just, if you say the word media in general as it pertains to political coverage, mm-hmm. is how things are framed.
Yes, exactly.
That's my main concern, right? Because you can take any set of facts and portray them however you want to, mm-hmm. and you can frame them in a way that presents a positive story or a negative story for either side if you really want to go through all of that effort. And it seems as though the media has taken the circuitous route mm-hmm. of framing whatever the stories happen to be in favor of insanity.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand, like, I hate to even do this. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna bring up John Stewart for a second. Don't kill me. So as you're aware, John Stewart is back. Yes. Yay! Back hosting The Daily Show one day a week. And of course, for his debut show, his show debut, or at least his return, he chose to tackle the issue of Biden's age, which, totally fine. I get it. It is basically the story of the month this week.
Yeah.
And it's a totally understandable topic to choose as your re-entry into the political landscape, your return on TV. Mm-hmm. How exactly did Jon Stewart plan to tackle the issue of Joe Biden's age saying, well, they're both old. Right. Oh, my God. He both sides did. Jesus fucking Christ, right? Yeah. Like, we live in a world where it appears as though, like, Joe Biden's job performance doesn't actually matter
right.
in regards to his age, which the only reason you're concerned about his age in the first place is that you're worried that he won't be able to do the job. Well, he's clearly been doing the fucking job. Why does no one ever say that
exactly.
when you talk about his age? He's a John Stewart. He should know better. But again, like, you know, a lot of people have these same complaints about John Stewart from 2016, right? They're like, oh, you know, you're both sides, Hillary and Trump, then, and now you're back doing the same thing. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this, you know, this was his, he's exhausted his material on Joe Biden's age on day one.
Yo, let us hope.
And we can move forward. But that is a microcosm of the macrocosm
yes.
with the media coverage.
Well, I just have to throw in there that he didn't seem to have a problem with Bernie Sanders being an older man. So
I ain't have time. I didn't want to make this a 4-hour podcast.
Yeah. So I don't really want to talk about him just because he pissed me off. And, you know, all I'll say is I saw somebody on Threads defending him and saying, you know what, there's a lot of independents out there, you know, who feel this way and they have to be addressed. And it's like, so we're going to win independents with ageism? I don't think so. There, you know, I get that there's a lot of independents out there who don't like Joe Biden for one reason or another. Why are you trying to say, yeah, we agree he's too old as a way to pull them over? It's like, that's not going to pull them over. What's going to pull them over is convincing.
All right, Kimberly, you can scrap the rest of the podcast. I'm just going to talk about this until the end of time. I'll give you another example of, like, just, I hate to do this. First of all, the other day, I guess it's been more than a week now, Trump held a fucking rally where, in front of cameras broadcasting all over the internet, he accused a migrant of shoplifting a fucking refrigerator. Ugh. And no one had the sense of mind to be like, damn, bro, where'd you see that at? What store right. were you at? Really? Shoplifting? Have you, like, you're going to take the refrigerator and put it on your back and run out of the store with it? Like, like, no one, like, when Trump says these insane things,
oh my God,
not only does it get zero news coverage,
right.
no one even asks him a fucking question about it. It's yeah. like, well, Trump held another rally today, mm-hmm. and Republicans seemed fired up. Like, what kind of fucking news coverage is this?
Right.
Like, again, you see what I'm saying? The framing issue.
Yes.
Now, I'm like, it's not that I'm a fan of MSNBC. It's just that, like, major media outlets have all moved so far right
mm-hmm.
in the last 5 years that they've totally lost me. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, they're on this appease the dictator program in hopes that they won't end up in pogroms like the rest of us.
Yeah.
I don't know. But look, I'm a fan of, rather, I used yeah. to be fairly supportive of listening to Ari Melba's show on MSNBC. And then you remember when we had this issue with Republicans not being able to choose the Speaker of the House
yes.
because they took the insane route of getting rid of Kevin McCarthy for someone dumber than Kevin McCarthy. You remember that?
I do.
So Ari Melba took the opportunity on his show to open with the segment blaming Democrats for the failures of the Republican Party,
yeah.
saying that the Democrats were responsible for House Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, I, you know, again, I'm fairly affluent with the use of the Twitter, you know, X as it is now. I like to call it Twix. You know, if you combine Twitter and X, you get Twix.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm not a Republican, so I'm left Twix.
Right.
Anyway, it's beside the point. So I posted, was like, hey, man, this Ari Melba thing, this is fucking bananas. Like, Republicans are wholly responsible for this. They're the ones who took control of the House, changed the House rules so that a single member could recall the Speaker of the House and force a vote. And that's exactly what Matt Gaetz did.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, why you out here blaming Democrats? Somebody need to pull this dude off the air. Now, I didn't tag Ari Melber. Tell me why, when I woke up the next day, Ari Melber had me blocked on Twitter.
Really?
And then, yeah, he had me blocked on Twitter. And I'm like, huh, that's interesting. Somebody must have snitch tagged me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Or maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe he follows me on his burner account. He's like the Kevin Durant of politics. He might be sensitive. I don't know. And then he got on. He had the nerve. Because, look, it was a flat-out lie. What he said. It really was. Like, there's no way around it. Like, and this is coming from a dude who's telling you, hey, I'm practically an Ari Melber fan. Mm-hmm. Turn on the TV next day. Ari Melber show comes on. You know what he has the nerve to do? To look straight into the camera and tell the entire country that Democrats were responsible for Kevin McCarthy not having a job and ended up with Mike Johnson. I'm like, oh my fucking God. Wow. He knows he's lying.
Yeah.
And then he had the nerve to make a point to reiterate it the next day. And it's like, oh, I'm out. I don't trust the media.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he pissed me off a long time ago when he referred to Julian Assange as a journalist. And, you know, it's like, no. And I, you know, he never blocked me, but I did tag him many, many times. And I kept telling him, this is disingenuous. What you're saying isn't true. And he just, of course, he ignored me. And this was back when, you know, before Elon. So I had my verification badge. I know he saw it and he just ignored. So, I mean, he gets a lot of tweets. I don't know that he reads every single tweet, but I would, I tweeted him so many fucking times. But here's
the
thing, though,
at least with, like, the Julian Assange thing, you can be like, all right, bro, you're taking some liberties with this journalistic thing with Assange. Yeah. Like, you could kind of maybe make an argument that some of the things Assange used to engage in were journalistic endeavors, even if they were cover for more nefarious shit. What the fuck explanation do you have for him blaming Democrats for Republicans being a disaster? Like, I have not. Like, it's indefensible. And that was, like, the point at which I realized, like, hey, there's no one on TV that you can really trust. Like, you hope they do a good job, mm-hmm. but they're probably going to let you down. Don't mm-hmm. put your faith in these people.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm fine with that. Like, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned about, I mean, you know, that just means we have to do our part.
Yeah.
Like, we can't rely on these people to save us. And it was the same thing with, like, Robert Mueller. It was like, hey, man, it's cool. Hope you get him. But if not, we're going to do our part. It's the same thing with the media. It's the same thing with Jack Smith. Mm-hmm. It's definitely the same thing with however it might be going down in Georgia with Tony Willis.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's
we're going to have to rely on ourselves to save the day.
And that's always been the story. And that's what I've been saying, you know, since Trump was president. We can't rely on Mueller. We can't rely on X. We have to rely on ourselves to show up and vote. And we did. You know, I mean, we did vote for Hillary. We did vote for Biden, although fortunately, in that case, the Electoral College, you know, but I mean, look, Arizona went blue because of Donald Trump. So that's why I have... You know, I have some faith that this time around, I'm not so excited about the Senate. I don't know what's going to happen there, although I do think there are paths for us to keep the Senate, but we're going to have to wait and see.
Well, our path for us to keep the Senate, I hate to ruin it for you, but it's probably Trump getting indicted and ending up in a position where he's not on the ballot.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, that would be a path. I mean, and it's a very narrow path. I mean, I don't think we should absolutely assume that they're going to win, but I think we have to have a very sobering look at the reality of the fact that they are, you know, they have fewer seats to defend and, you know, they're favoring it. But there are things that could happen. And, like, for instance, the thing with the border right now, they're pissing off so many people who take this very seriously, and that could have effect on the Senate vote. So, you know, I mean, I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm not a psychic. I don't know. But I think there are paths.
I'm not hopeful, and it's not that I'm like disparaged by it.
Right.
It's just the math is what it is.
Exactly.
Probably
going
to lose the Senate by a seat, maybe two.
Yeah.
And we would likely have a better shot if Joe Manchin hadn't decided to be a bitch. But you know, you can't rely on Joe Manchin to not be a bitch.
Anything.
So we shouldn't have put our eggs in that basket anyway.
Yeah.
You know, like if he was still running for the Senate, probably have a good shot of breaking 50-50. But the thing is, the reason why we even have a shot in the first place is because my people's down in GA, they mm-hmm. turned up and turned out in 2020 to put our guys in the Senate. You know, of course, it was a short-lived celebration because Trump tried to overthrow the government the next day. But, you know, having Warnock and Ossoff in the Senate in 2020 put us in a position to be in a a place where we're even thinking it's feasible in 2024. So that's like another lesson. Like, there are so many consequences that stem from actions that people took years ago, which is the reason why you need to do everything in your power, every opportunity that you get, so that, like, you don't have to deal with unforeseeable consequences down the line.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to prevent, or rather to be in a position where you have the opportunity to create some positive outcomes in the future. It's like, if we hadn't showed up, or rather had Democrats in Georgia not shown up in 2020, we wouldn't even be talking about this.
Yeah.
We'd be like, I guess Biden's just going to go 4 years not appointing any judges.
Right.
Right. Or at this point, you would be talking about 8 years of,
right,
of Biden not appointing any judges. So I just, you know,
well, I'm exactly there.
To,
yeah,
reflect on the actions you should be taking now to benefit, yeah, yourself in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not overly hopeful about the Senate, but I think I'd like to be surprised, and I think there is a small little opportunity for that to happen. But, you know, and keep in mind, everybody, the Senate is not gerrymandered. So for all of you out there who say it's not worth it, show up. It is worth it, because it is not gerrymandered, and it's a totally different story than the House. So, I mean, that's the other thing. I think sometimes in red states, there's a lot of Democratic voters who feel like, well, my vote isn't going to count, and it keeps, yeah, them home. So don't stay home and vote and all that good stuff. But you know what? We're coming to the end of the show. There's so many other topics that we just didn't get to. So you're just going to have to come back. We'll get to them later.
Okay, look, if you want to kidnap me and just hold me hostage and ask me questions for 24 hours straight, you're more than welcome to. Like, just don't tie me up. I wouldn't want Bob to get any ideas or anything going on. You're not a Fonnie Willis down there. Like, it's totally platonic over here. You don't have to engage in those type of activities to get the job done.
Well, we'll definitely be doing this soon enough, because, yeah, as I said, I mean, you make my life and my job so easy. So why wouldn't I want to have you back on all the time?
No, you know, I am happy to oblige.
Awesome. All right. Well, then, as I ask all of my guests at the end of the show, please tell everybody where to find you.
You can find me on the Twitter, of Twix rather, at BlackKnight10K. I'm also on the Threads and Spoutable. I think it's D910K at each of those. And you can definitely check me out on the Pardon the Insurrection podcast. If you just search for Insurrection podcast, like, I'm sure we'll pop up pretty close to the top, because we're the only good one. by the way, never forget January 6th, motherfucker, yeah, tried to overthrow the government. We got to make him pay. And the way you can help me do that is to subscribe to the pod, help us grow our little audience, and make sure this shit doesn't happen again, because... Jesus Christ, I'm not going to survive another 4 years of Trump. He's going to start cooing on day one.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be 4 years. It will be until he dies, and then we'll get like Ivanka or something. So yeah, we cannot afford that at all. And of course, you know, I'm just on everywhere. I'm just giving all my the names,
yeah,
I have on every. It's too many. I wish I would have just had one uniform handle, but I don't. So I'm Kimberly Johnson. You can find me. I know you can. Thank you, D-Knight. It's always such a pleasure talking to you.